this coming Saturday, the 24th of October, there will be a live Bugle show as part of the Unmute Podcast Festival. Go to unmutepodcastfestival.com. We'll have Nish and Alice as the guests. It'll go out as a live stream and also as the next full episode of the Bugle.
Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to issue 4170 of the world's leading and only audio newspaper for a visual world, albeit a visual world whose current defining characteristic is an invisible thing that is playing absolute fucking havoc with everything that is visual. I'm Andy Zaltzman. If you don't believe me, please be a little more trusting, even if I do acknowledge that we now live in an earthly universe where the first assumption is that whatever anyone is telling you is a lie. That is a fact. I'm in London on Monday the 19th of October 2020, and the Bugle in the last week has become the first podcast ever to make it to its teenage years, apart from numerous other ones that got there first. But the Bugle is now a teenager. We had our 13th birthday in the last week. October 2007 is when this show kicked off. And I admit it, we've only really made it to teenagehood if you ignore the year or so in 2015-16 where we didn't really put anything out and the world, unsurprisingly, went a bit wonky in the meantime. But it was the Bugle's 13th birthday, which means that this week it would be the Bugle's bar mitzvah. But Jewishness, of course, comes through the maternal side, and the mother of the Bugle was Fate, who is very much an atheist. But the Bugle is now a teenager, so expect some very stroppy, uncommunicative and hormonally confused episodes over the next few years before, in 2029, the Bugle settles down and gets a proper job as a podcast about management consultancy. Joining me, appropriately enough, two people who were themselves once teenagers. From the Northern Hemisphere, Tiffany Stevenson, and from the other one, what's it again? Southern, and specifically from New Zealand.
The better hemisphere.
Well, currently, that's only on the current rankings. Let's take the all-time rankings, James. James Nakise. Hello, James. How are you?
Good. Hello. As we say in New Zealand, let's go outside and hug each other.
Straight in with it. Oh. What's hug? I can't remember what hug is. So how is the old normal, as I believe it's called in New Zealand?
It's quite funny because New Zealand is often referred to as England, but 20 years in the past.
No, it's just what 8 months in the past now.
About 8 months.
A bit longer. Yeah.
Borders are shut, unless you're a rugby player. Then, as always, the rules do not apply.
You're allowed in to get beaten, basically. Tiff, we're still stuck here in COVIDious Albion, but you have been overseas.
I went to Turkey, yeah. And then while I was away, they were like, the travel corridor's shut, so I'm now isolating in my house. Which I do you know what I've done? I've bought a sad lamp.
Oh, right.
Which is ironically not sad, but tragic, I think.
What is a sad lamp, not just a lamp that's been switched off?
A sad lamp is for seasonally affected disorder. Have seasonally affected disorder? Am I just annoying all year round? It's difficult to tell. Under the rules, you're like kind of not supposed to go anywhere. I think I'm allowed in my back garden. I don't know. I guess the rules depend on, you know, whether you're me or whether you're Boris Johnson's dad or Tony Blair. You know, it's all up for grabs.
Well, I think when you say it depends on whether you're... I think it just depends on whether you give a shit about the rules or not, essentially. So that's like any law, really. We're going to start with the section in the bin this week because we've got a special teenagers section in the bin because the Bugle has entered the world of teenagery. So we look at some famous teenagers from history. Boris Becker, 17 when he won Wimbledon, 18 when he retained it, but even he was never on quite as hot a hot streak as one of his teenage predecessors, Joan of Arc, the literal hottie from history, who was only 19 when she suffered a career-ending conviction for heresy and related toasting injury. The First World War catalysing Archduke sceptic Gavrilo Princip was only 19 when he de-archduked Franz Ferdinand in 1914. And Queen Victoria, well, she was queening it up as an 18-year-old in the pre-Instagram era, whilst Wolfgang Mozart, little Timmy Tinkletunes himself, was churning out the classics throughout his teenage years. Some of his teenage works include operas such as Darren Loves Linda, No One Understands Me, and Concerto for Orchestra and Hormonal Teenage Boy. And we reminisce on what we personally were like as teenagers and how different we are now. I'll kick this one off. As a teenager, I was obsessed with cricket. I didn't have a real job. I was baffled by the world in general, and I hadn't been to a synagogue since my bar mitzvah. So no real change for me. What about you?
The thing that I would like to say to my 13-year-old self is they won't look bigger if you wear three bras on top of each other. I was still waiting for that to happen at 13. And then when it did happen, I was like, can I just go back to that not happening?
James, tell us about the teenage James Nikiso.
I think I was thinking about doing like comedy, but living with my parents and just not really sure what I'd do for a career. So this has really been a full circle pandemic for me.
Chris, I imagine you were just, you know, producing podcasts and radio shows, you know, left, right and centre as a teenager, all right?
Yeah, but I think probably the only fundamental difference between now and then was the fact that I spent most of my time, age 13, playing Super Nintendo, whereas actually yesterday I spent the entire day actually also playing Super Nintendo.
So, you know. It holds up.
We've basically all come back. Always go back to how you began. We are recording on the 19th of October 2020. On this day in 1789, John Jay was sworn in as the first Chief Justice of the United States. And if you're listening, Mr. Jay, for f*** sake, come back. If you're so bloody good at justice, sentence yourself back to life to sort your shit out. On this day in 1579, James VI of Scotland had a special festival to celebrate him becoming a 13-year-old, in fact, and becoming an adult ruler. He turned 13. They had a special festival in Edinburgh. And that was way back in 1579. It involved a speech in Latin by John Sharp, a prominent local lawyer, who only got 2 stars in The Scotsman, although Sharp insisted it read like a 3-star review. The review claimed his speech was a bit tricky to follow if you didn't speak Latin and lacked any originality. But by contrast, Broadway Baby gave it 5 stars and described it as dazzlingly inventive, daringly challenging, and grammatically perfect for the many Latin-speaking fans in the audience. Plus ça change. There was also, at James VI's 13-year-old coming-of-age festival, a tableau vivant, or in modern parlance, a pretentious piece of performance art bullshit. There was a sketch show involving 4 boys dressed as girls representing peace, justice, plenty, and policy, which won the Bubonics Plague Remedies Award for Show of the Fringe that year. Some saw it as clunkingly unsubtle, the Observer. Others praised its daring use of perceptions of gender and satirical exploration of the interrelated roles of the concepts of peace, justice, plenty, and policy, together with a very amusing song in which you kept expecting the lines to end with rude words, but then they didn't. That was from The List. The King's Horoscope was presented by an actor playing the ancient astrology Seb Ptolemy, bit mainstream. And there was a show representing the abolition of the Pope's authority in Scotland. Easy targets, a lot of those Trump shows in 2017 all over again. Some students did an overambitious adaptation of a Russian short story to an average audience of 2. Obviously, puppetry of the penis did well. And I think I'm right in saying that Edinburgh legend genius Simon Munnery made his Edinburgh debut that year.
The old puppetry of the penis tour manager is literally next door right now. Weeping, having never really got over the memories of it.
Speaking about puppetry of the penis, they're always about.
Is it like Oh, what was the film? Was it like, is it in the Da Vinci Code or one of those where they show the devil always popping up throughout various points of history? And just there's in the background someone doing a helicopter with their dick.
There's always two in a photo. One's got a giant moustache, the other's got a bucket hat.
Well, it's basically, I mean, Michelangelo pretty much painted them onto the roof of the ceiling chapel, didn't he?
Look, they're Australian icons and we do them as a service.
They're great lads, but it is funny to think that they were there during all the key historical events.
Top story this week. New Zealand has had a general election and the world has actually taken notice of it for probably the first time in New Zealand's history, James. Jacinda Ardern, the Prime Minister, romped to victory with 49% of the vote for her Labour Party, up from 37% 3 years ago when she came to power as leader of a minority coalition, the National Party, who were in power for most of the previous decade, down from 44% to 27%. And the Nationalist New Zealand First, led by Deputy Prime Minister Winston Peters, down from 7.2% to 2.6%, and a disappointing zero seats. I mean, New Zealand, James, very much bucking the trend of global politics by not voting in favour of nationalists, lunatics and so what has gone wrong?
Well, I think part of it was the night before an All Blacks match. So everyone wanted to get it done pretty early. And this is absolutely true, Andy. The concession came at 10 p.m. at night. So it was all done and dusted because obviously the All Blacks was on the next day. Everyone had to go to bed. Some of the MPs actually went out and partied afterwards because the clubs were still open. So one of them, Chloe Swarbrick, who is the first Green MP to actually win a seat, won a very important seat of Auckland Central, and is in her mid-20s or early 20s. I apologize to her if I've insulted that. She went out and DJed, following in the footsteps of another young Auckland Central List MP, Jacinda Ardern, who used to DJ in her youth, which is because in New Zealand, all politicians are also DJs. But it's been a very, very calm election over here. We had some crazy parties. And we all found them very entertaining. And then in classic New Zealand state, we got to the polls and went, yeah, nah. and we didn't let them in. So we've just mainly got the Green Party and the Labour Party looking at maybe will they, won't they form a government. The National Party has completely been eviscerated. Part of it was because their leader, Judith Collins, for our international listeners, her hero was Margaret Thatcher. And she did her best to emulate that woman by dying so badly in both the debates and the polls. Her husband is Sam Morn, which she told us as much. She told everyone about her Sam Morn link so much that Sam Morns were confused by how much she was playing the race card. And so she's just she's taken the National Party to a horrific defeat. Winston Peters, who won't be well known to international listeners, but is essentially Maori Trump, and has been doing populism since 1996. He's finally out, or is he? Because he's been out before, and then he comes back. He's sort of New Zealand politics version of herpes. So you think he's gone, and then he comes back another election. He is 75 now, so we think he'll die. But as anyone who's watched New Zealand cinema knows, old men don't die. They just get reborn whiter. So
didn't they shut down their Twitter at one point, the Conservative Party? In the midst of it.
The Advanced New Zealand Party was putting out so much disinformation that Facebook just shut them down. Because they were having rallies in the middle of Auckland's lockdown and saying the virus isn't real. This is all a big conspiracy. 5G is the cause. Like this was a... And they're still, some of them are still espousing it. Billy C.K. Jr., who's the big leader, just went on a rant on Sunday night saying the election was rigged because his party of lunatics only got 0.9% of the vote. And the Electoral Commission just came out and went, nah, it's not, because in New Zealand, that's how it works.
Yeah, they got 20,000 votes advance New Zealand, and there was a very entertaining televised demolition of its co-leader, Jamie Lee Ross, by the news anchor Tova O'Brien, that appears to have gone globally viral, where she pretty much told him to shut up, stop lying, and then piss off, essentially.
Well, she's the Arya Stark of New Zealand journalism, as Tova O'Brien. I think that's where Jamie Lee Ross made a mistake, because he went, I'm going to take on this little girl and I'll show her what's what. And she just stabbed the shit out of him, metaphorically, of course. It was an evisceration which was so violent, Quentin Tarantino is actually basing his next film on the interview. And Hugh Jackman has asked that she play Wolverine in whatever movie comes out next. But I think what made it so perfect is that for most of the pandemic, Tova O'Brien has been cast as a villain in New Zealand, because she kept asking questions of Jacinda Ardern.
That's not what journalists are supposed to do, James, in this day and age.
Yes, I mean, that's what I'm told. That's the information we've been getting too, Andy. And so there's sort of this visceral reaction from New Zealanders, where like the villain of the season has, in a last minute, turned her powers for good. And really, it was so bad, I generally feel we need to check on this man's mental health.
I was fascinated by this, as you mentioned, that there might be a coalition anyway. So the Labour Party has won with an electoral majority, which is pretty rare in New Zealand politics, correct? But Jacinda Ardern may seek to form a coalition anyway, and from an outside perspective, I mean, could she be any more annoying? I mean, what is the point of politics if you don't use your victory to ignore everyone who didn't vote for you and sow the seeds of division that you can then exploit at the next? Why even bother trying to win if you simply cave in anyway to the rabid demands of the extreme consensus lobby?
Well, I think this is where her fiancé, Clark Gayford, comes into play, or as he was called by one journalist, Hilary Barry, sometimes a man is behind a woman and he's okay.
Oh, was that on the TV coverage of the 6 hour?
Yeah, that was on the primetime TV coverage, where I'm pretty sure our anchors were stoned, I'll be honest.
Well, it was because it said on the prompter, it said, behind every good woman, I think it was supposed to say behind every good woman was an equally good man. And they were just like, no, we're not going to say that. So I was just filling it in. Behind every good woman is a man not observing social distance. Behind every good woman is a man leaving a mess. Behind every good woman is a man statistically most likely to kill her. You know, that kind of thing. So in the midst of that.
Well, I think it's in Clark's case, it's behind every good woman is a man who's just gone fishing and is cooking up a barbecue. So the reason to have more MPs in the government is so there's more people for the food to be passed around.
Right.
Because it might go to the Green Party. There's a Māori Party back in as well with Raruri Waititi. I tell you that he's not related to Taika, but it's New Zealand. So I just don't know. But it's the exciting thing is that we're still waiting on the results of our referendum, which we also had, to see if we're going to legalize weed and euthanasia. And that result is coming out on October 30th. So Halloween is going to be lit in this country.
So the referendum on euthanasia, there were two slightly different referendums. There was a binding referendum on euthanasia, which means that if it goes through, everyone will be legally obliged to euthanize themselves on the 30th of October. I think that's right,
absolutely,
isn't it? And the cannabis referendum was a non-binding advisory referendum, which is, I think, what Brexit was as well. So just be careful. But be very careful of that, New Zealand. Very careful.
Well, I mean, the nice thing is the way that cannabis often works is that if they do change their minds on the result, most people who care won't remember. So.
We'll just want snacks. We'll be chill.
There were so many election snacks. I think when people look back on the 2020 New Zealand election, they'll refer to it. People are talking about it as like the red wave or the red tide, which just seems a strange label to chuck on an election. I think they should call it the snack election, because the Prime Minister's partner was cooking snacks for the journalists. The journalists were eating gummy bears and jet planes in the studio. I don't know if that happens in Britain when there's an election on. Like, you could tell that weed was definitely in the referendum. People were dancing about.
But there was an election when David Dimbleby, who sort of anchored the election coverage for BBC for decades, had a bite of a Mars bar, and it pretty much brought the nation to a standstill. So, it's like when David Gower wore red socks when he was England cricket captain. So New Zealand, you know, clearly going it alone by choosing not to elect a pompous, corrupt, regressive, morally vile man, prepared to blow any manner of social dog whistles to get into power, which does raise the question, what makes you so f***ing special, James? And I guess the thing is, you know, New Zealand's a small country. There's only 4.9 million people. At any one time, 30% of those people are scrabbling around in the mud trying to get hold of a rugby ball off each other. You know, there are no indigenous mammals, and I'm not counting bats, because bats are birds, because they can fly. That's biology for you.
I like their drunk.
With all due respect, James, New Zealand is the kind of nation that can afford to have someone sensible in charge. But, you know, we in Britain and our friends in other countries of bigger bigness than New Zealand, we don't have that luxury. We need an incompetent cunt in charge. Otherwise, who knows what will happen?
Well, in New Zealand, we call that the Australian manoeuvre. And the Australian papers have been panicking about this. I think Rupert Murdoch may have lost his mind, because all the papers over the past 24 hours that Murdoch owns have been going, this is a disaster. The incompetent New Zealand leader has been re-elected. It's a cult of personality around Jacinda Ardern. There's no reason she should be elected. And at no point do they seem to mention, oh yeah, and the pandemic thing as well. It feels like everyone in the world is really happy about the New Zealand election because they still get to play with Jacinda Ardern. We kind of feel like we let everyone's favorite kid still be able to come out and play.
Yeah, I mean, her supporters are cool. Like, cool people came out for her. Over the weekend, Kirstie Alley came out for Trump. comparatively, was it so Dean Cain, Scott Bio, Antonio Sabato Jr., three of the dudes that I had teenage wide-ons for, are now Trumpers. And so I didn't get more right-wing as I got older. I did get narrower, though. That's the opposite of having a wide-on. It's just getting narrower. Like, the people that are coming, and listen, of course Kirstie Alley's allowed her opinion. She was saying she was voting for him because he wasn't a politician and he got stuff done. I mean, he's definitely got stuff done, none of it good. She believes Trump's good for the country, but she also believes that dudes from space with plaits and man buns called thetans live amongst us. So cult recognizes cult, I think, is what I'm saying. Cult recognizes Cole. I thought about joining Scientology last time I was in LA, just for the parking. They've got a lot of that locked down. So just comparatively, like, the people that support your prime minister versus the people going all in for Donald Trump.
I don't know if we have Scientologists in New Zealand. I think we must have. Like, they're out there. But they'll never beat the cult of rugby.
I think, Tiff, one of the fundamental differences is that between Britain and, you know, America and New Zealand is that America's quite a young nation, and essentially it's going through a very tricky adolescence, as discussed. New Zealand, even younger, still in the childlike idealism phase. We in Britain, we've been through that shit, and we know that politics is just about killing time until you die, trying to desperately justify your past behaviour to yourself as you realise that there is essentially no future. So, you know, we're all at different phases of our evolution.
Well, next generations are showing that they don't necessarily fall in line with what their parents believe as well. There's been a big breakaway in the States of, like, children of Trump supporters who are now sort of endorsing Biden. So there was Claudia Conway, Kellyanne Conway's daughter, and she's on TikTok, which is great because you get a glimpse of what Kellyanne looked like before she was possessed by a 3,000-year-old demon who hates truth. it's like watching a pure soul. And then Rudy Giuliani's daughter came out and endorsed Biden as well. She said, if being the daughter of a polarizing mayor who became the president's personal bulldog has taught me anything, it is that corruption starts with yes men and women, the cronies who create an echo chamber of lies and subservience to maintain their proximity to power.
Happy Christmas, Dad. But I mean, I guess, you know, kids turning against what their parents believe in is just a fundamental rite of parental passage. You know, I fully expect my kids to turn around at some point in the next 10 years and say, Dad, there's more to life than watching other people play sport. Now, I mean, they'd be wrong, but I will accept that they're going through a phase. But I guess it's a bit trickier if you are a public part of a political machine that is trying to hoodwink people into voting against their own best interests. If your own personally, artisanally, hand-indoctrinated kids aren't even buying it, I guess it makes it harder to sell to a sceptical public.
Isn't Kellyanne Conway's husband also against Trump?
Yes.
What is going on in that household at, like, dinner time? Do they just, like that? I feel like that's taking it, all right, we're not talking politics at the table, to a massive extreme.
The Russian influencers have been in the news with the trick bot, a Russian Trojan thingy that I do not fully understand, but sounds concerning if you're a free and independent democracy fan, has been interfered with by both Microsoft and US Cyber Command independently of each other. The Washington Post suggested that the Russian trick bot was aiming to sow more confusion in the US election. Now, that is, I mean, you've got to admire the ambition to try and think you can add to the confusion of an American election. That's like trying to add more detail to the Sagrada Familia Cathedral in Barcelona, more notes to a Bach piano recital, or 10 free plankton to a whale's lunchtime happy meal. There is no need. It will make no difference. So, yeah, we'll have more on the American election over the next few weeks. Not long to go now until all your worst fears are confirmed, stroke a joyous eruption of relief at the election of an old man. And that works for both sides. Incidentally, for any Trump fans listening to the Bugle. Have you got any yet, Chris? Still can't quite crack that demographic, can we?
No, but as pointed out, we do have 5 Muammar Gaddafis listening, so there's every chance.
Yes. Yeah, 5 Muammar Gaddafis on our list of voluntary subscribers. To join them, go to buglepodcast.com and click the donate button to make a one-off or recurring contribution to keep this show free, independent and thriving. Now, obviously, with my pessimist's hat on, and as someone who's not a fan of Trump, as I've probably laid my cards on the table over the last 4 or 5 years, and my pessimist's hat is a reinforced industrial-level safety helmet with a gas mask attached, I'm just assuming that Trump will win, because the betting is still bafflingly close, and I'm just a natural pessimist. And I'm sure that the year 2020 has got at least one last radioactive turd to power crap into this year's global cake mix. I think it's very dangerous to have any optimism about what do you guys think?
The glass is half empty and it's the bit that's left in there is poison. Is that what you're saying?
Essentially, yes. Yeah. But it's not half a glass of water.
I think whatever happens, America has been pushed to this kind of brink of, like, I don't know that they can come back from in the way that we know America to be. Like, I saw Biden kind of going, this isn't about red and blue states. This is about the soul of a nation. And I sort of agreed with him on that. But no matter which way it goes down, unless it's like a huge, like, overwhelming win for Biden, I think any other kind of scenario plays out in, like, people taking to the streets and it being, you know, quite a chopsy time.
Chopsy. That's a good term for it. That's a lovely euphemism, actually. It sounds quite fun, really. Like a water ride or something.
Trump supporters, if they go to the streets, they're the ones with the guns. I think that's the unfair advantage here, is that if Trump wins and everyone goes to the street, they're like, I've got a sign and it's whimsical. And the Trump guys are like, no sign, but heavily armed.
Well, I mean, looking at some of the signs at the women's rallies against Trump, one sign said, vote for your daughter's future. She was rather charmingly hoping that people vote with even half a thought for the future in modern democracy and make America think again. And I don't think that is a good idea. I don't think America will like where that process takes it.
I think people are forgetting we used to tease America about being stupid before Trump came along.
Yes. Oh, dear. Happy times.
I think Biden might win. I'm trying to be cautiously optimistic, so I'm going to go the other way and say I think he might take it.
Well, all I would say to any buglers listening is vote hard and vote often.
I'm with Tiff. I reckon it's going to be fine, Andy. But right. In saying that, there's a high chance that weed's going to be legal in my country by the time it comes around. So I'm going to be eating a lot of snacks in the American election as well.
Well, I guess in terms of people changing their mind, there's no real point stopping supporting Donald Trump now if you've supported him all this. I mean, that'd be like breaking into the Natural History Museum at night and then a security guard finding you preparing to have sex with a Stegosaurus skeleton. You're not going to back out then, are you? You might as well just go through with it. Otherwise, it would look weak and weird, you know. So you're just going to plow on and say, don't worry, Steggy and I are friends with benefits. It's no big deal. So, I mean, you can't back out of it.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's mind is being changed, although that image is thoroughly f***ing disturbing, Andy. Thank you. Smegosaurus. Oh, God!
Chris putting up naughty messages on the Zoom call.
Oh, sorry.
It's a disgrace. Britain news now, and well, moving across the Atlantic, whilst the country is collapsing in a swab of befuddlement and resentment about COVID and the latest regulations, the Johnson Junta government has casually dropped the totally predictable bombshell that it is set to wander off from Brexit talks without a deal. It basically just dropped into conversation that, oh yeah, we might have no deal. Thus, either, and you can choose one of these two options, either betraying all the people who voted for Brexit, having told there would definitely be a deal, all the people who believed Johnson when he said that a deal was oven ready, all the people who didn't vote for Brexit, but are still, I believe, legally considered to be human under UK law, and all the people who weren't able to vote due to being too young, not vote enough, or not born, and who might appreciate a productive relationship with a f***ing massive economic powerhouse right on our geographical doorstep, especially given, you know, all the other shit that's going on, or he finally unleashes Britain from the shackles of Europe to which we've been enchained since 43 AD. Your call, people. Two sides to every goldfish. It's very hard to know exactly what's going on in these negotiations because obviously they're not televised, they're secret. So it's really just through leak and counter-leak and rumour and counter-rumour. And it could just be Johnson posturing, really, Boris Johnson posturing. And obviously Michael Gove said the same thing. Whenever Gove says anything, you just assume something else is the truth. So Michael Gove has just announced he's going to have a sandwich for lunch. I assume that means all chickens are going to be fitted with jetpacks before slaughter. So it's hard to know what's... what's going on, Tiff, with the Brexit negotiation? We've largely forgotten about for a moment. I mean, that's the one benefit of COVID, I guess, is we've been able to ignore Brexit and for several months.
Don't worry, Andy. Resting incompetence face is on it. he said we're sort of heading towards a no deal again. And I mean, the thing that's happened just in the last sort of 24 hours is our credit rating has dropped as a country.
Right.
Our credit rating has dropped. Like, we ordered a shit ton of stuff from Littlewood's catalogue and then defaulted on our payments. Two pairs of knee-high boots preventing your ability to lease a car 5 years later. What are you talking about? Anyway.
It's good to share.
The point
good
is, it doesn't look great, does it? I think combined with the pandemic and the being talk of a recession and bottoming out, basically... Boris has basically, there's kind of like talk of a Canada style Brexit, an Australia Brexit. At this point, like I remember when it first started, it was like, we want a Norwegian Brexit. We want this, but and now you're just flinging around names of countries. Everyone's sort of, I don't even want to say let it go because we've had bigger things to worry about in the face of the pandemic. But, at this point, like, is it still too late to back out? Like, is there a way back in?
Oh, to back out of backing out? No, I think that is definitely
can
too
someone
late.
Leave a window open a crack?
I'm not sure windows being left open is a good idea at this stage. I mean, I just hope, because there's always, you know, there's talks are supposed to end soon. I just hope this isn't going to be one of those things where you want everything tied up neatly, but instead they leave it open for an unnecessary and inevitably disappointing sequel. So, you know, I'm sure our innate British bulldog spirit will see us through. I guess the problem is that bulldogs are not always great at complex trade negotiations, I've found. Okay, how about two doggy biscuits and a slice of ham in exchange for you stopping doing that to my leg? It doesn't always work.
I reckon there's just crying. I think a lot of the negotiation is just Gove and Johnson. Just the door shuts and then they just start crying and they're like, please, please, we've promised so much. You know, like in the spirit of the teens, you know, like when you're a teenager and you talk some real big shit to your mates and your parents are there and then your mates leave and you turn around to your parents, you're like, please back up the temp of what I've just said. So they think I'm so cool right now, please. Because they're still trying to exit, and then Tiff, all the Brits were going on holiday to Europe as well.
Yes.
Are a lot of those people still Brexit people as well?
Oh, no. I mean, listen, this when it all first happened, when the referendum happened, we had people with like kind of no self-awareness whatsoever. There was a couple called Brenda and Barry who flew back from the Costa del Sol to show their support for Farage and the Brexit party. And they said, we've come because we want our country back, the one we don't f-ing live in anymore. Like, so I think a few of these people, like the chickens are coming home to roost, you know, like they're actually, you know, living in places like France and Spain and stuff, and realizing that actually leaving the EU is a kind of two-way thing. It's not just about getting Johnny Foreigner out of the UK. It means that you can't actually, you know, have the same reciprocal agreement with those countries yourself.
Yeah, but Tiff, what you're saying there is that we should have thought about the consequences before committing to a course of action. And that is, you know, naive and old school, with all due respect. COVID update, and whilst we've been recording, Wales has announced that it's going into a, quote, firebreak lockdown from Friday, with basically everything shut and Offa's Dyke reactivated fully, I believe. We'll wait to see whether Scotland follows with Hadrian's Wall. This follows the introduction of a new three-tier graded lockdown system for England. Last week, the tiers are medium, large, and hide in your Anderson shelter until further instructions. I believe it's a rather confusing mess, Tiff. But I know you know someone who will surely be able to explain this rather confusing system for our listeners.
Oh yeah, I had a word with my Scottish boyfriend, and he agreed to explain a thing. Lockdown tiers. As you're all aware, the government in Westminster has implemented a very simple and straightforward three-tier lockdown system to keep us safe during a second wave. For those of you too thick to understand, I'll simplify it for you. There are three tiers, medium, high and very high. Boris has gone for the man in Nando's approach here. No such thing as low. F*** your man going lime. In tier one, you can see six folk at a time. Well, six folk you want to see, because if you want to go to the pub, you'll see dozens of other folk you didn't ken who also be there with no more than six folk they ken. Didn't worry though, because as we all know, once have had a couple of pints, they're in more considerate and likely to follow rules. Then, of course, at 10 p.m, the pub's shut and you can go and have a street party. Tier 2 is much the same, but you can't see people you like in your house. You can still see them in the pub, though. Tier 3, you can't see six folk in your house, garden or the pub. You have to go to the park or to a street party for Tier 1. Now, obviously, Scotland, Wales and Ireland have a slightly different system in place, but they're all equally simple to understand and they dovetail perfectly into each other, so there's no need to worry about no seeing your family.
Great. That is all now crystal clear. Thanks, as always. The Queen was criticised last week for her first public appearance of the pandemic not wearing a mask, and she didn't flip the bird either. And people said, yeah, that all the people she met had been tested, but it didn't necessarily set a good visual example. But I would say, is the Queen supposed to set an example? Is that really her job? I mean, if so, if she sets an example, we'd all be wearing big flashy hats, letting our firstborn sons take over the family business without so much as an interview, trying desperately not to mention our secondborn sons in public anymore, never voting and expecting to be driven everywhere by someone else. So she has a role in this country, but is setting an example that role? Were you upset that the Queen didn't wear a mask last week?
Well, I just thought it was a missed fashion opportunity.
Right.
Also, there's coding with how the Queen holds her handbag, you see. If she's holding it with two hands, it means get me the f*** away from these plebs, I think, according to the Secret Service. I don't know. Just there's another opportunity to say something, isn't there, with a mask? So, yeah, there's all these very, very, like, I feel like she could have sent a strong message, or maybe even just printed her face on a mask, but just like bigger, and that we would have had a laugh at that. Or like, not dead yet.
Right.
Not dead yet, Charles. You know, that kind of thing.
Tiff, who would have their face printed on a mask?
Yes, you can, by joining the Bugle Premium voluntary subscription, you can get a face mask with my face on it, albeit a logoed version of my face. Go to thebuglepodcast.com and click the donate button. Two plugs this week, Chris. That's more than I usually manage in a month.
It's brilliant. I'm absolutely loving this.
Hey, don't say that in a sex shop in Soho. Sorry. I'll delete that.
Nope.
Well, that brings us to the end of this week's Bugle. James, thank you for bringing us up to date from rather chirpier side of the world at the moment. Have you got any other shows you'd like to tell our listeners about?
Look, it's my mental health podcast is always available for the rest of the world if they want to check it out. But no, otherwise, look, on a personal note, guys, I know it's really shit over there. And jokes aside, I hope all the listeners here are going and supporting you both by getting your merchandise or buying whatever they can from you.
Right. Well, since you mentioned merchandise, we do actually have some merchandise at the moment. Thanks for teeing that up, James.
Again,
go to the buglepodcast.com and click the merch button for your selection of exciting t-shirts.
I hear there's t-shirts. I hear there's masks.
But, Christmas jumpers.
Yeah, Christmas jumpers are now fully available, Chris.
They are, yes, in store now.
In store now.
Selling out. We bought more. We had to get more.
Oh, awesome. Tiffany, shows you'd like to plug?
Oh, well, I've got some online ones coming up, but if you follow me on Twitter, at Tiff Stevenson, you'll get them there. Also, my special is still available to buy on Vimeo for a fiver, Madman. And actually, there's quite a lot of stuff in that. That when I sort of wrote it, I think it was in 2015, 2016, that has sort of become relevant again. So if you're interested, go watch that. You can download it on Vimeo. Yeah. £5. I don't know what that would be in any other currency.
And buy our album, bro. Buy it. As we say. Yeah.
Thank you very much for listening, Buglers. We will now play you out with some more lies about our premium level voluntary subscribers. Gareth Colwell wonders why so many British prime ministers have names that work as spoonerisms. In the last 50 years alone, notes Gareth, we've had Broaden Gown, Baloney Tear and Head Teeth. Going further back, I would add Lona Bore to that list, but for the fact that his actual name, Bona Law, needs no alteration, obviously. Inspired by this, Rachel Stern wonders if the current Canadian Prime Minister will ever run a public information campaign urging his people to have faith in martial arts. Rachel says, I can see the trust in judo slogan working really well for him. Ray Wall thinks it must be massively tempting for archaeologists to claim they've found 30,000-year-old scratches on rocks in any cave somewhere. Her thinking is threefold. A. It makes archaeologists feel good about themselves. B. Seriously, who's actually going to check? And C. Prehistoric people are generally quite shit at art, so it's quite easy to fake. Renata Strauser takes a slightly different view of Paleolithic art and says, maybe the reason we think that Paleolithic artists were all a bit rubbish, with all due respect, was that actually the bits that we found were from preschool and kindergarten classes. It all makes sense. Simple animals, handprints, and basic stick men. I can't believe no one's claimed this before, concludes Renata. Further support for Renata's theory is posited by none other than Sarah Beeb, who points out wisely that most of the prehistoric daubings we find are in caves. Think about it, says Sarah. If you were a hard-working stone-ager and had to put your kids in nursery while you went out to work, you'd want them to be in a safe place that reduced the chances of your nippers being eaten by a dinosaur or whatever. So of course, you'd probably put them into a nursery in a cave complex, wouldn't you? It's obvious. Ben Friedman speculates further that the reason we don't have any of the higher quality and more commercial art from 10 to 40,000 years ago is that it was all bought up by private collectors. Ben suggests it's probably all hidden in vaults somewhere, like so much of our more modern art is, for no real reason. For his part, Tom Perry has had enough of people banging on about how rubbish prehistoric art is. Tom blasts, at least they didn't just put a pile of ammonites on the still-warm corpse of an elk that's been savaged by a saber-toothed tiger and call it the lonely ambition of the heartbroken soul or something. They did art that people could understand. Oh look, it looks like a bison. Well guess what? It is a bison. Thank you. Patrick Hogan thinks we've interpreted cave paintings wrong in any case. I think they were storyboards for action films, argues Patrick, mostly involving bison or other things with scary horns, understandably. Write what you know, as they say. Sadly, concludes Patrick, they lacked the equipment to actually make all the films they plotted out in their caves, but clearly there were some real blockbusters in the pipeline. That makes sense, says Hani Salem. We're actually more closely aligned to these people commercially and creatively than we think, notes Hani. Just look at how they found a winning formula and then just kept churning out sequels and minor variations of the same thing, just like we do. Peas in an evolution of civilizationary pod. Obviously, if you've had a hit with Bison, Horned Avenger, you're going to follow it up with Bison 2, Big Fur is Back. Kyle Livingston claims, I studied this at university, without sounding entirely convincing. Kyle continues, and they didn't stop there. After the success of Big Fur is Back, obviously there came Bison 3, Step It Up, and that title works better written down, to be honest. And the controversial Bison 4, So Horny, and Bison 5, Still So Horny. Not to mention other franchises, continues Kyle, like Aurochy, and one-offs like School of Aurochy. Here endeth this week's lies. Bye-bye.
Still listening?